Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Rick Edwards. On today's show, Jon Snow calls for more social mobility in the media. What can broadcasters and programme makers do to change the faces in television? Plus, top TV makers share their hot tips from the sessions. We discuss why the media are always shocked at what time normal people get home from work. And in the media quiz, we play monkey tennis. That's all to come on today's Media Podcast. Joining me today at the Edinburgh International Television Festival, also making her media podcast debut, we have Kate Harwood, Managing Director of Euston Films. Hello, Kate.
Hello.
Are you as nervous as I am?
Oh, definitely, I'm sure. Are you nervous?
My knee is trembling, Kate. In a good way, I think. In a good way. So Euston Films is now part of Talkback?
No.
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 What a great start.
It turns out you should be known.
Honestly,
we just
this
move
knee doesn't.
Back. Euston Films is part of Fremantle Media, which also Talkback is also part of. But we're affiliated. We're a sister company.
Okay. I mean, look, I wasn't a million miles off. Kate.
No. You can't all mush us all up together.
Can
but Euston Films is a big heritage company and label of drama in drama terms. It makes the kind of old drama producers go a bit misty-eyed, because it was the company that was responsible for shows like The Sweeney and Minder,
right,
and Long Good Friday and Widows and great classics from the kind of 80s. So I was very lucky to be given charge of it 3 years ago and started my own slate in Euston Films brand.
Just to go back to this Talkback thing, would you say that Euston Films were now cousins with Talkback?
I'd say siblings.
Siblings? Oh, so close.
Yeah, fine. But different genres. You know what one's like in genre.
Yes, I do.
In fact, somebody from Talkback who won't be named actually said to me, so drama, let me tell you, one episode, how long does it take to shoot? What, 5 days? I was like...
Yeah, because it could be up to seven. What have you got coming up then?
Well, we have our first commission, which is a show called Hard Sun by Luther creator Neil Cross. It's his first big show post Luther, which we're delivering into the BBC this autumn.
All shot.
We're sort of faffing around with the music and post-production at the moment, starring Jim Sturgess and Agnes Dean, and Nicky Mukabird. We call it a pre-apocalyptic crime show. So these two cops stumble across the fact the world's going to end in 5 years. And they're being hunted down for trying to stop them exposing the secret. Meanwhile, kind of weird and wonderful criminals come out of the woodwork and start creating havoc. So it's a Neil Cross special. There's lots of thrills and jumps with great central characters played by Jim and Aggie.
For those people who haven't experienced this festival before, could you paint me a little picture with words?
Right. Well, it's a kind of melee of media types from all over the industry. You know, the key thing is, I think, as much happens between the sessions as in the sessions. In fact, I was told today of somebody who's definitely here and not intending to go to any session, because there's far more interesting networking going on around and about. So there's a lot of chat. There are people you kind of wave across the room at and hope to God they don't come across and speak to you. And there are other people you wave
That's
across
sort
the room
95%
at.
Of people,
no,
isn't
I
it,
would
actually?
Say it's high as that, but it's certainly either or. There are some people you go, as well, oh God, there's so-and-so, I hoped I'd never see them again. And then there's other people you go, oh, there's my dear old friend who I worked with at the beginning of my career, look at us, we're still standing, how fantastic. So it's a mix of both, really.
Some of my friends run a production company, and they have just rented an Airbnb just up the road, and it's really nice. and they haven't gone to any sessions. They haven't even got tickets. They're like, tickets are really expensive. And then they just invite people to come to the Airbnb. And it's such a treat.
Oh.
It's like this massive kind of Georgian terrace.
It's like their own festival.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just invite people over. They've got macaroons. I mean, I recommend you up. It's really
good.
Great. I mean, it used to be when it was up at the George back in the day, I'm sure Boyd and I remember, it was easier to sneak off and see, you know, a play or a show or a bit of comedy. Now they've stuffed us down one end in a conference centre. It's harder to do that, and I miss that a bit, actually.
Yeah, you can still do it.
You can't.
A brisk walk, you can do, get down to like Cowgate in 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's true.
I've been doing a bit of that. Yeah. Joining Kate, we have two veterans of the podcast, Heat Magazine's Boyd Hilton.
Hello.
And Faraz Osman of Indie Lemonade Money.
Hey, how you doing?
How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. What's going on?
Just this at the moment. Just doing the media podcast.
I say day two of the festival is always an interesting one, because people have been out a little bit too late for the past two nights, so they're all a little bit delirious, but they're still trying to keep with it.
Is it only day two?
I think day two is kind of peak festival.
Yeah, definitely.
Everyone's here. Like you say, everyone's been out.
Yeah.
Everyone's kind of muddling through.
Yes.
My thing is that like you keep seeing people that you know, but you can't remember from where and like what the context was and what the situation
and
was.
And you can't get quite close enough to read their name badges.
There's a lot of this going.
There's so much of the old eyes down.
Can I just nudge you a little bit so it flips over and I can figure out who you are? But.
I get on day three. I find myself just resorting. So you just grab the lanyard, bring it up to your face, read it. Yeah. Fine, got you.
Bold.
Favourite moment of the festival so far for us?
Jon Snow's McTaggart was brilliant, and I'm sure we're going to come on to it. But I think that the thing about, you kind of came up here, and I don't want to play it down, because Jon's obviously absolutely amazing. I think that there was a sense that the name wasn't box office in the way that Kevin Spacey was in previous years. And so it's a little bit like, oh, I'm hearing from a guy who I see on television every day. Is this going to be that exciting? But he gave something that was just beautifully eloquent and really felt like it was taking the temperature of what's going on right now. But like I said, I'm sure we'll talk about it later on, but it certainly deserved the standing ovation that it got, I thought.
Boyd, what's the most telly thing you've heard anyone say so far this week?
Oh, that's a good question. The most telly thing I've heard anyone say. I've heard a few people talking about how they're flying off to their holiday homes in the south of France.
Of course.
I mean, I don't want to name names, but at least three in the last 10 minutes told me that. So,
not me and Perez. Definitely
not you guys, no.
It's Rick. All of Rick's three holiday homes.
Yeah. I'm just doing a little tour.
Yeah.
Why not?
On Teeb is beautiful.
Yeah. One of them's a Georgian terrace that sells macarons as well.
Exactly.
Later on, we're going to hear about some of the commissions that have been announced this week, but we are going to start off by talking about the McTaggart, obviously the keynote speech. Jon Snow was talking to delegates about the media's responsibility for social mobility. He mourned the loss of local journalism, and he called for social media companies to pay more tax. Let's hear a clip.
Why didn't any of us see the Grenfell Action blog? Why didn't we know? Why didn't we have contact? Why didn't we enable the residents of Grenfell Tower, and indeed the other hundreds of towers like it around Britain, to find pathways to talk to us and for us to expose their stories? In that moment, I felt both disconnected and frustrated. I felt on the wrong side of the terrible divide that exists in present-day society and in which we are all in this hall, major players. We can accuse the political classes for their failures, and we do. But we're guilty of them ourselves. We are too far removed from those who lived their lives in Grenfell and who, across the country, now live on amid combustible cladding, the lack of sprinklers, the absence of centralised fire alarms and more revealed by the Grenfell Tower.
Jon Snow there. Boyd,
yes.
Was it a good speech?
Yes, it was very good. I mean, we have to remember last year, for those of us here last year, Shane Thingy from Vice, thank you, gave one of the worst McTaggarts in history, right?
I know we don't want to talk about it. I quite liked half of it.
Did you half really?
Everyone
well, the halfway
showed absolutely loathed
the
it.
The halfway showed clips of stuff coming up that he was in.
Yeah, I mean, that was fairly
self-congratulating. Supposed to be about young people.
Anyway, I thought it was grotesquely embarrassing. So the contrast couldn't be greater, because I think this and before I get on to what they was actually saying, I think it's a really interesting difference between the two of them and some other actual McTaggart speakers I can mention. Jon Snow is a normal human being. Do you know what I mean? Like, he may be on TV every day, but I feel like he's not just there to massage his own ego, and he's not just there for stardom. He's there because he passionately loves doing what he does. And that came through in the McTaggart, and I just saw, I mean, I did agree with every word he said, pretty much. I mean, I think further than saying Facebook needs to pay more tax, he was actually saying Facebook needs to stop paying for the fact that everyone is giving its content for free, and it's not investing in any way. And apparently, I was at the McTaggart dinner last night, and Jon Snow said that by 7:05 after his McTaggart speech, the head of Facebook, what's his name?
Mark Zuckerberg.
Most famous man in the world. You can't remember his name. I was out late. Was responding to it and saying, oh, actually, we will invest in journalism, you know. And I thought that's kind of actually achieving something, really.
Yeah.
And seemed to be in direct response to Jon Snow's speech. So that's pretty incredible for a McTaggart at Edinburgh, I have to say. So I thought it was brilliant, and everyone's saying inspiring, that is the word. And I just think, but I think it's good to see a really important person in TV who comes across as a proper, decent human being who's passionately believes in what he's doing.
The key to it, you know, yes, there was calls to action, and, you know, and I thought the piece about the idea that the blog about Grenfell was something that was out there,
yes,
and everybody saw after the event, and it was a sort of destruction of local news that was a kind of an interesting kind of root cause of it. But I thought the thing that really made it was how he personalised it. I thought that, you know, obviously showing his confrontations at Grenfell, which were famous and were reported all over, but actually that extraordinary telling of the meeting of with the young girl who ended up dying in the fire obviously rocked him to his core, and it still is shaking him. And I think it's that extraordinary thing when you see someone talk not just from the heart but from a deeply felt personal experience, and an endeavour to sort of turn that into something that we can all share and be motivated by. It was really moving, really moving.
It's interesting. I think Boyce hit it on the head when it comes to the comparisons with Shane Smith's piece last year, because they actually were saying very similar things. Like, we're representing a generation that hasn't had a voice, that may have been hidden previously. I think that's what Shane was trying to say, that we're going into these spaces that telling these stories that would normally not be told. And I think John was actually making a very similar point, but in a much more eloquent way and a much more considered way. And I think that there's a real opportunity and a thirst to actually make sure, A, that we're doing it, but also figuring out how we cut through all of this noise that's been created and felt like a real revolution, and it was like freedom and democracy of the internet, and isn't going to be great, everyone's going to be able to hear stuff. And actually, as we've seen the last year, the loudest voices, no matter what they say, are the ones that are rising to the top. And there needs to be a sense back of balance that we need from both news, but also networks. And Vice do that because they are able to kind of create very high quality programming and documentaries that are saying something and getting into spaces that not other people weren't getting into. So it's always quite ironic that Vice is doing what Jon Snow is asking for, but they're not self-aware enough to recognise that it needs to be more humble, like Jon Snow was, and less about the individual, like Shane Smith was, by putting himself in the front of every single programme.
I don't think humble is a thing that
I don't think
Shane Smith's ever heard of the word humble.
No.
But I mean, they did the definitive Charlottesville documentary, didn't they, Vice,
yeah,
in the States.
They do some great stuff.
Yeah, they do, absolutely, yeah.
And it's totally important to note that they did that because they did the research beforehand.
Yes.
They saw it coming. Yeah. They were like, something's coming here. It's coming. And that's exactly what John was talking about.
Yeah.
Something was happening at Grenfell that we, as an industry, should have been aware of before it actually happened. And the whole thing that he kept repeating of, like, where were you before this happened,
yeah,
was his key point. And actually, Vice have been doing that for a while.
But that McTaggart, you've got no sense of that. I mean, if you've been a Martian and had no idea what Vice was, you'd have thought it was a channel funded by a loud Canadian,
yes,
trying to do crap Scottish accents, which put himself in, you know, I mean, it was
exactly,
gave you none of,
yeah,
that. It was all talk.
But I think the hope is that if you combine the two together, there is a genuine hope.
It's
and
coming
and I think
from
that
something.
The Facebook thing that's happened, you know, today, yesterday, I can't remember what it was now, but all of those things, that conversation is now absolutely live. And that's what a good McTaggart should do, is kind of really get your finger on the pulse, figure out what's happening right now, say how you need to move the needle. And I think John did that, and I think it was a great McTaggart. Go watch it if you haven't seen it.
It was interesting when he spoke about how he got into journalism and then talked about the barrier to entry that new people have, master's degree, the fact that it's impossibly expensive to live in London. What are the solutions to that? They seem like big problems.
Well, he was saying how he was in the newsroom where he works there in Coventry, but you don't have to get a degree, you don't have to go to university. I think that's really good, important. I do think, I mean, people always, I know I work for a celebrity magazine and everything, but, you know, I'm not a trained journalist in any way, and I think there is a little bit of that, you know, you have to have
achieved these certain educational high watermarks. I think it's just rubbish.
And internships are not to be challenged. Yeah, actually, we were talking at dinner last night about this, and a friend of mine's husband, you know, she was telling me about a scheme they have in publishing where you kind of offer your spare room to people who want to come and do an intern at a company that's London-based. So it's a sort of scheme that's going. And we were talking about seeing whether we could set that up in telly in some way, where you basically, so that people can get work experience or come and intern for a bit, you can offer them your spare room for a couple of weeks.
It's a great
idea.
A
really simple scheme, isn't it? Let's launch it right now.
Yeah, okay. We're all in. My spare room is full of shoes.
So
I can clear the shoes out.
So is mine.
Clear the shoes out. I'm very happy to have
I think
someone.
It's a great idea. We're looking into it.
I guess the issue is that without sort of initiatives like that, rich young people are always going to have more chance of getting into this industry. Is there a wider solution?
It's really hard because, you know, as he was saying, most of the industry is still based in London, so I don't know. And I don't know whether, you know, there was at one point they were talking moving Channel 4 to Birmingham, and that's not going to happen now. It is impossible to live in London, isn't it, if you're young?
It is, and I think it's also in my side of the business, in drama, it's really difficult because, you know, back in the day there were lots of grassroots drama clubs, and, you know, that students could get grants to go to drama school. All of that you now have to privately fund, and it's almost, you know, the drama schools are very London or Glasgow, but are very few outside in any other centre. So trying to bring people from diverse backgrounds into acting, it is really difficult. When I ran EastEnders for a while and then sort of was kind of responsible for it in-house for BBC, and I came up with an idea, again, maybe it's just, you know, I just didn't have time before I left to set it up, of having an EastEnders summer school where you basically, you know, in the kind of enshrining of EastEnders, you spend time and encourage people to take holiday, not just about young people, actually about, and it was inspired a bit by, you know, actors like Bob Hoskins, who late in life turned to acting and brought their kind of life skills and their history and their class and their background onto the screen and said, we need all of those voices in drama. We need them massively.
I would say that things are changing, though, and it is, again, it's this whole kind of democracy and freedom of the internet, etc. But you know, Hums has just walked past us now.
Yeah.
He's just done a thing with Luna King. He started his own YouTube channel. It's one of the most watched in the UK, and he's exploded. He's just got a show on BBC Three as a result. I've just come from a chat with Dan and Phil, who are two guys that were, you know, Dan was working in Asda. Phil, you know, just started making videos in his bedroom, and they're now two of the biggest talents in the world. And I think that the ability for, without being patronising, young people or just people that have unheard voices to go out there and get themselves an audience and get themselves known. John's point at the beginning that there was a blog about Grenfell Tower that went unnoticed, that's still a moment where it's kind of go, we need to notice that. It's not about kind of going, let's give those people jobs because they're writing blogs. It's really great. It's about looking at places that we don't normally look at and kind of giving it, shining a light on it, highlighting it and taking it seriously. And I think it's happening with a younger demographic where they're not just turning to TV and broadcasting, but they're looking for genuine voices elsewhere. And that's encouraging, and hopefully that will kind of just start snowballing and will mean that people have a more varied media diet.
Now, I have to say, TV as an industry is much better than print journalism, where I come from, because print journalism is absolutely dominated by posh white people. I mean, and it's incredible, and it's so hard to change that. And TV, I look at, you know, I know loads of people working TV, I think it is much better than that. So there are worse areas of the media, believe it or not, for that kind of diversity, for young people to get through.
Outside of the McTaggart, elsewhere in the festival, there was a lot of sort of hand-wringing about diversity. But this year, instead of it being about ethnic diversity, there's a lot of stuff about reflecting the UK's regions better. So ITV and Channel 4 are both asking that. Kevin Ligo said that there was some research about audiences outside of London that had the room sort of gasping because apparently they get home by 6.
Yes, I knew
people
that.
People were staggered.
They were.
People were on the floor.
Yeah. I was amazed by how few people knew that outside of London people can get home by 6.
AM, right?
Yeah, because they're working hard.
Party town.
Yeah.
They're in an edit till 6 a.m.
Yeah. Exactly.
He should have known that already. That was funny. I mean, I don't want to be too, you know, but if you look at TV ratings, there are loads of shows that do really, really well at 6 and 6.30. And it's equally true that people in London don't get home until 7.38. Mm. But it was funny, you're right, how people were like, wow, what an amazing insight. and they did research probably cost gazillions of pounds from some company.
They could have just rung up someone.
Ring up someone in Darlington at six, they're in.
Absolutely. Yeah. He also said something like, did he claim that 75% or something of people in the North watch Emmerdale? Or something,
well, incredible. I think that's what I've always heard. It's the Emmerdale effect. It's like, you know, that's when I, again, when I ran EastEnders, you always knew that Emmerdale, their audience were home by seven, whereas the EastEnders audience had to wait.
There you go.
They just weren't home by seven.
There you go. Yeah.
Is this all sort of part of that sense that we're just a bit out of touch?
Yes.
In our
the metropolitan
media
elite.
Yes. It's that again, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, we are, but I do think I think you used the word flagellating yourselves about it. I think just pay attention. I mean, it's not difficult, I don't think, to other parts of the country. But flagellating yourself about it and trying to make it a whole big thing, I feel is even worse in a way. I'm glad that Channel 4 isn't moving to Birmingham, for example. I don't think it makes sense to just geographically shunt a building and all its people who work there from the capital city to Birmingham for the sake of it, to show that you're taking the region serious. I think that's ridiculous. So I'm glad that's not happening. And yet, at the same time, the people who run Channel 4 have got to go out there and meet people around the country and commission programmes.
And the Guardian's not moving to Manchester, apparently.
No, right, exactly. Yeah, but that's fair enough.
But irrespective of whether you move, you know, like Channel 4 to Birmingham, should broadcasters be looking to work with smaller indies that aren't based in London?
Oh, without doubt. I mean, it's no brainer.
And why isn't that happening? Why is that not a feasible thing to do?
Well, of course, I'm an indie based in London, so and possibly the wrong. I mean, I think, you know, it's where communities of producers live and work, and it's about creating those communities. And as we all know, you know, the Welsh drama boom has been very real, and that's because production was put there. And when you've got production somewhere, you know, you start to draw young people in and the great thing about drama production is it feeds so many different jobs and skills. You know, if you're a carpenter in a particular area, you know, sets need building, so there's jobs for trainee carpenters. It's fantastically diverse opportunities there. So I think, you know, with drama, when you start production, small indies will grow to service those areas of production. So I think, you know, and those stories need to be told. But you also, so it's about production, it's about creating the work, but you also need to have some responsibility to represent the areas you're in. And I think that starts to become, people start to say things like, oh, we've done a Scottish drama show. So that's that. You've got to think broader than that.
Could Lemonade Money just operate out of Hull?
The thing is that there's two sides of this, right? There's when a production starts, which is really important. You look at things like Hollyoaks, you look at Ackley Bridge, you look at Emmerdale, you look at all of these programmings. But when they start becoming a big thing and they're made out of London, they create an economy around them. The second side of this conversation, however, is ideas. And the problem is that we are a creative industry that is communication. It's all based around communication, and you have to communicate with commissioners, and they have to get you, they have to understand your idea, you have to explain it in a particular way, and unfortunately the informality of going up to a commissioner and saying, you get me, I get you, now do you get my idea, let's go, that's actually quite a subtle, difficult thing to crack. And it's this whole thing about going to the same universities, and even being here, this feels, when you're here, like every time I'm here, it feels like when you're in secondary school and you're looking for a place to sit at lunch, and like, do I sit with these group of mates or these group of mates? Because they know me like this or they know me like that. And you need to kind of spend that time navigating different personalities and keep being like a chameleon to talk to different commissioners and broadcasters and brands in different ways. And that's where the challenge is. Now, a lot of those are based in London, and that might be where the problem is. And I actually think that you need to separate those two issues. It's not just about production, because it's very easy to kind of go, that's a great idea, let's make it out of Bristol. But it's also to kind of get those voices out.
But it's also, it's voices, you know, I mean, I have three commission shows with three different writers, none of whom live in London. And one actually, Neil Cross, actually lives in New Zealand. That's another story. But that means that Hard Sun, our show, we always say never sets, because there's always someone working. But I'm working with Stephen Butchard, who is, you know, lives in Liverpool, is a very strong voice from Liverpool, made Good Cop for us at the BBC, made Five Daughters. Currently we're doing a show for Channel 4 which has been announced, set in Baghdad, you know. And so it's not just the producers who bring the ideas, you know. Very, a lot of writers now live outside London. Why wouldn't you if your job is transferable? It's a great way of working.
Okay, we'll have a bit more from Boyd, Kate and Faraz in just a moment. But first, here are some top telly execs revealing their favourite moments from the Edinburgh International TV Festival.
This is Russell T Davis. Oh, it's been a great festival. I have been terrible at going to sessions, but I love it's the meeting people and stuff like that. Work gets done here. Deals are made. It's a real thing. And I particularly like meeting those young people. That's what it's all about. I'm 54 now. If you can't pay it forward now, when are you going to? Before I die quickly. So they're just full of youth and joy and will be employing me one day, hopefully. So that's really genuinely what I come for. Those one-to-watch people, the stuff like that. It's brilliant. I'm slightly terrified by the march of the huge budget. When you watch Big Little Lies, which I think is a very good script elevated into an enormous drama by an enormous budget, kind of terrifies me. It's exciting, and I liked watching it, and yet you fear for the normal British drama because we can't always that sort of money, and that money's going to get scarce as well, and not every drama should be pitched like that. It shouldn't. So I'm worried that we're seeing new templates being forged that everything else will have a hard time catching up with. That's not the biggest worry in the world, then. It's not, things will still get made.
I'm Alistair Scott. I'm director of Screen Academy Scotland. The festival's always a great chance to get exposure to the great and the good of television and see some amazing talents and have interesting ideas about the future of television, if we can talk about television anymore, the future of broadcasting, the future of Amazon, the future of Google, Facebook, everything's colliding together.
So I'm Kat Lewis from Nine Lives Media in Salford. It saddens me that some people have this Jeremy Clarkson view that you've only made it if you live in London, but nobody could argue that Peter Kay hasn't made it, that Paul Habbert hasn't made it, that Nicola Schindler hasn't made it, and all the wonderful writers that Nicola works with at Red Productions. And, you know, I just think that you should be able to have a career in television wherever you live.
That was Kat Lewis of Nine Lives Media. We'll have more media talk after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is the Media Podcast with me, Rick Edwards, very much available for hire. Kate Boyd and Faraz are still with me. Boyd, you spoke to Jay Hunt,
yes,
the outgoing controller of Channel 4. She's on stage on Wednesday, days after Bake Off was reviewed very positively in the press.
Yeah.
Was she on the front foot, did you feel?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, it was weird because she's the outgoing controller of Channel 4, and it's odd to do these controller sessions, which are kind of the ballast of the festival. There, you know, they're traditionally going on ever since the start, I think, where all the controllers of all the main channels and some of the smaller channels get probed in depth by the likes of me, and they kind of talk about what they're gonna, you know, what their big plans are. And of course she's leaving, so she doesn't care. I mean, she does. But it was part kind of look back really at her whole career at Channel 4. She's the longest serving controller of one of the main channels, and I think her passion for, you know, some people are critical of her. There was a thing in broadcast saying she micromanages and this, that, and the other, talking about her personal management style. For me, like, she clearly, passionately cares about that channel, has done a pretty, really good job at, you know, giving it some huge hits, returning hits year after year. I think they've invested in drama right now, The State, that's just, I think, it's probably finishing last night or tonight?
Wednesday.
Yeah, tonight.
No, what's tonight? Thursday.
This very ambitious 4-hour thing about ISIS that they've had. You know, the Daily Mail said it was a recruiting video for ISIS, which is absolute bollocks, and it's not.
Ridiculous.
It's a really clever, in-depth attempt to look at this question of why British people should go end up going to Syria to join ISIS. It is a fascinating question, and it tries properly to answer that. So I think Channel 4 was, by and large, does what it should be doing. And she was interested in talking about Bake Off because it happened after last year's session that she did, and so I got to ask her about it, and she said, you know, look, it broke down with the production company in the BBC, so she took it and she's fine with it. And it has got really good reviews, so she must be massive. She's massively relieved. Yeah.
She said that at 3 million, they'll break even.
Yes.
I think that's not.
I agree. Yeah,
I should have made up, isn't it?
I should have.
Which is lowering expectations.
Lowering expectations, definitely. Mm. It's like a football manager who goes, yeah,
be
we're not
very happy with a 1-0 loss.
Yeah, but like Mourinho says, no way am I United the favourites to beat Huddersfield. No, definitely not. Sorry for the football analogy. I think it needs to get. I think they'll be devastated if it gets 3. I think they want 4, 5, definitely 5. You know,
what's it going to get? Let's all say.
I think we should all guess. I think there should have been an Edinburgh-wide sweepstake on it.
It's just going to be media podcast.
This is fine. This is fine.
You go
I'm
first.
Going for 5.4 million.
Okay. Kate?
4.7.
Are we saying the first episode?
First episode.
Yeah, first episode, yeah.
So I'm going higher. I think we're looking at 6.5.
Yeah, see, I'm going higher. I'm going 5.9.
Okay, and we're talking overnight. This is the initial overnight.
Yeah. Right, okay. None of you are consolidated.
No consolidation.
The rules have got to be very careful.
Yeah.
And then do you think, you mentioned like we're talking about first episode, do you think there'll be a drop-off?
There's bound to be a drop-off because people are going to want to see what it looks like.
But it grew on the BBC.
Yeah, it did.
It's an established brand now, and you're going to have the fans come over to it, they're going to watch it, they're going to want to see what it is, and then there are going to be people that are the purists that only want to see the presenting talent that they see and they know and they love, and also it's just the fact that it's not on BBC One, so there will eventually be a drop-off. I think what's interesting is not the show itself, but the scheduling around it. What goes into it, what comes out of it, can they sustain that audience? And I think that if we are able to kind of figure out what the schedule looks like and the promotion around it to ensure that they're able to keep that audience, then we'll get an understanding as to how successful it's been for them.
John Snow's Channel 4 News is before it, and Bear Grylls' Celebrity Island is after it.
I think the combination of Noel Fielding and Sandy Toksvig is genius, I have to say. Sandy Toksvig is one of the funniest people in broadcasting, and the kind of idea of Noel Fielding floating through that aura in some kind of mad way, I really want to see it.
Yeah, and he does kind of float through it in that way.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. Some crazy kind of
Sprite. You've seen it, right?
I have seen it. Yeah, I've seen 2 episodes now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the clever thing. Well, I don't know how clever it is. They've completely stuck to the formula. Yeah. So, it set the music, the look, the tone, the pace is exactly the same as classic BBC Bake Off, and they've just kind of stealthily got Noel Fielding floating around, as you say. And Sandy being funny instead of Mel and Sue, and Prue Leaf is so much in the mould, I have to say, with all due respect.
Does Noel eat the cakes?
Hardly, no, but Sandy does. You do notice that. But you know, I love Bake. I've always loved Bake Off, and I really, really like it. I'd say it's like 10% not as good, but just maybe by episode in the middle of it, they'll get it as good.
I think it did need a refresh. I think the last season didn't hit it for me, and I think that actually it was due a tweak at the very least to kind of continue to make sure it's interesting.
Oh, I've been deliriously happy with it.
The last season felt like it dragged a bit for me. So I think actually, regardless of where it stayed or where it went, it needed something to kind of make sure it continued to be interesting.
In the previews that you watched, were there ad breaks and how did they sit?
Yes, there were. So you didn't have to sit through the ads, obviously. But you do see where the ad break is coming. They're quite. I thought they were quite cleverly placed. Sometimes it's at the point where they'd say, your time's up, and then it'll go to the outbreak. Yeah. So they do find natural places to have them. Mm. Interestingly, the one change they have done is they don't have those little documentary little filmlets, you know, where they explain what the history of some kind of bake is. Yeah. Which I think, I know one in every single episode last year on BBC. I think later on they dropped them. But in the early episodes, you always got those. They're not in there at all.
Mm. I don't think they'd be missed.
No. I guess they were. I guess they were running out of steam a bit, because there's only so often you can do a history of the Bourbon cream or whatever. So they're not there. But apart from that, it feels fine. But I don't think anyone's going to watch the ads, I have to say, because it's so natural to go off and make a tea. I was watching it on my laptop and I wanted to go and make a tea there
have
and
a
then.
Slice of cake.
And pause it, and have a slice of cake, yeah. So I don't know how they're going to deal with that. that.
Oh, the advertisers will be delighted, won't they?
They will.
Outlander, I think, is interesting, and it did well for More 4, despite the fact that it was first shown on Amazon.
I thought that was really interesting. Yeah, Jay said that at the mic. Yeah. So this is the thing, because I think when you're in the bubble of the Metropolitan Media Elite, you think, oh, everyone's got Amazon Prime, everyone's got Netflix, they're watching this stuff. But she said that Outlander, which has been on Amazon Prime for like 2-3 years now, is a big, big hit on More 4. And I think, of course, why wouldn't it be? Because my mum doesn't watch Netflix or Amazon Prime. It's only in a percentage of UK households have got it. I don't, you know, not by no means the majority of UK households are watching those services still. And they still don't tell us how many people watch any of their things, by the way. She said, you know, we've no idea how many people watch it on Amazon Prime, but she's getting millions watching it on More 4, which is great. So it does show you that still, good old fashioned linear is still the way most British people watch
because
TV.
It's sort of there.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Last year at the dinner, I was sat opposite the guy who created Love Film. And that obviously got bought by Amazon, and now he works and looks after all the film for Amazon, I think, in the world. So this is the incredible thing. Last year, and I don't know if it's still true now, I was like, oh, so Love Film just is defunct. He's like, no, they were sending out, I think he said 800,000 DVDs a year.
Wow.
And he was saying, and I'm not sure I quite believe it, but that outside of London, still the most common way of consuming a film, not in the cinema, is on DVD.
Yeah, but it was wound down last week.
And because it's
Love Film have stopped sending out DVDs.
Oh, that's tragic. But still, last year it was still going strong. That's my point.
Sadly.
What happens to all the DVDs that are sent out? Do you have to like send them back?
Yes,
like,
yes. And when you've watched it, you send
them
back.
But then what happens to them now?
The last one that you got, do you
keep it?
Is that
it's like a souvenir of the good old days.
I will say, and this is a pure conspiracy theory, and I've got no backing up with this whatsoever, but I did raise my eyebrows when she started talking about Outlander, because there seems to be a nice little relationship she started with Amazon Prime.
Oh,
and
really?
Not Amazon Video.
Well, there has been rumours about Jay and Amazon for
it's all set up to kind of go in that direction. And I personally think it would be a good move for her. I think Netflix has a really strong identity of the sort of content it makes, and it gets excitement around it. And you know, they did it with Amazon, did it with the Grand Tour, but I don't feel like they've really repeated American Gods, maybe. But
well, their greatest show is Transparent.
Yeah,
but I tell you, the brilliant thing about that is most people think it's on Netflix. Honestly, I've asked this question constantly, and you're absolutely right. I can go on about this all night, so I'll be quick. But I am incredulous as to the marketing of Amazon Prime, because they've got some great content. You're right, you know, particularly Transparent, but yet somehow it has not hit through as a cool brand to watch content.
I'm developing something for Amazon at the moment. Okay. Yeah, and you know, it is great. It's a really bold idea. I won't say what it is, but it's a really bold idea, and they're incredibly excited about it. But I think they know that out there the ceiling is so much higher than they are at the moment. And I think you're right, it's about curating what they've got, but it's also pushing it past the books and the cornflakes and everything else, having a separate way in, having a better marketing.
I'm amazed they didn't give it a different name.
That's what I think people, like, give it a different people name. Who pay for Prime probably don't realise that they
no,
can
No, I don't
get,
think they
I
do.
I think they sort of don't quite know where it is.
No, I agree.
There's certainly, I mean, from a media story, and I think they come as a package, David and Jay, and I think as a media story, for them to go over to Amazon Prime or something like that feels like where their next iteration of what those two are doing is. And it's compounded by the fact that, you know, we stand here, and it's not a secret, it's an open secret about the micromanaging and the criticism that she's had about working with indies, etc. All of that goes away when she starts working with a distributor like that. They are ruthless. They, you know, they don't get back to emails. There's none of this. Like, they will make you wait in the reception if they want to make you wait in the reception. It's, you know, they're a big American corporate company and they're not a public service broadcaster. And I think that they probably are looking for somebody that just does nothing but make a success of a channel, or in this instance, a brand. And I think that those two are definitely prime candidates for that. Prime candidates. I like that.
Yeah, that's good. Nice. Also, that was a wonderfully backhanded compliment, I think. Elsewhere, Kevin Ligo was talking about his plans for ITV for the year ahead. What's he got coming up? What can we expect, Boyd?
All I can remember, it's terrible, isn't it, from Kevin, my huge memory of Kevin's session was him being asked, what's the future of comedy on ITV? And he said, bleak.
Yes.
And I just thought, I have to say, on the one hand, I commend him on his honesty, and he was not joking, by the way.
No.
And he just kind of said, well, it's just impossible, hard to get right on ITV. We try birds of a feather, and, you know, and that was about it. And he's got Ben Adorn, which is a big hit always. But I just thought it was really depressing that he's not literally not bothered about trying scripted comedy on ITV. So everything else he said, kind of like, I was like, oh. But he has got a lot. To be fair, they are investing in loads of drama. They've got some good drama coming up. ITV drama feels much better now than maybe a few years ago. I don't know.
Well, it's a very welcoming place now, right, okay. ITV, actually, as indies. And Polly, you know, has got that sort of bright, kind of welcoming attitude. And I think you really know what they are now,
right.
And it's not what they're not. There always used to be that criticism of ITV drama. It was like, oh, this isn't ITV, this is not for the ITV audience, and that's actually incredibly depressing to sort of be pitching against a negative. But Polly's so not like that in terms of personality, and she's incredibly welcoming, and you know, and very, very decisive and very quick. So yeah, no, it's great.
Yeah,
definitely.
And they're commissioning really good drama writers to write stuff for their channel. Yeah. I feel like BBC One and ITV from outside are really competing for these like big now, like the Jack Thorns and the Williams brothers and these people who are kind of now almost like the peak
marquee names.
In terms of writing to them to give them new stuff. And I do believe, in fact, that the Williams brothers who did The Missing have got a series on ITV and BBC One launching the same week, a new 6-part series, and it could even be on the same
with one word titles, which actually you know, one's going to get the wrong one,
one's
the wrong
called
place.
Liar,
one's called Liar and the other one's called Relic
which is killer backwards.
Absolutely huge week in the Williams household.
Absolutely.
At least there's two of them. You know?
Exactly.
One can watch one can watch the
other. Exactly. Two TVs each corner.
Each of a bar box.
Never seen a bar box. Still never seen one.
No, no one has.
ITV2 had its most successful year.
Yes.
Mainly due to Love Island, but possibly because of BBC Three, I would guess.
A little bit, but I think Love Island is a huge is an absolute phenomenon. I mean, that I think that even they are shocked by it because when they brought it back last year, it did really well.
Yeah,
and I think they were surprised. Then this year, even bigger and even more of a cultural phenomenon, to the point where now people are like writing about it in the Times and Radio 4's talking about. John Humphreys has to be told what it is on the Today programme. You know that you've reached cultural phenomenon levels when people talk about it in that. And I think it has killed Big Brother. Let's face it, normal Big Brother. Non-celebrity brother is now an irrelevance, I think. So I think it's more about that, really, for ITV2 than necessarily BBC Three. I guess it's true that BBC Three isn't as existing channel, a linear channel, any challenge at all anymore. And I feel sad about that still, even though they will tell you that it's still doing phenomenally well. Everything does brilliantly well. But yeah, ITV2, and I think Love Island, you know, I have to say, it's a brilliantly made and produced and compelling thing. And on every day, and it's absolutely single-handedly destroying the idea that young people don't watch TV. Because my niece, who's 17, is absolutely effing obsessed with it, and will watch it wherever she is in the world on whatever device she can. And I think there are literally millions of 17-year-olds doing the same thing.
It really demonstrates that we're still in that era of hero shows. That like, if you get a hit on a broadcaster, it just changes the whole essence of what that network is and what that brand is. You know, and we've had it with Channel 4 and Big Brother, and that's like becoming an albatross. You know, Love Island is I don't have any doubt in my mind that Love Island now is going to be the thing, a little bit like Big Bang Theory on E4, that you're going to see again and again and again on that channel, and they just need to make sure they continue to innovate around it so it's not just relying on that one brand, but it's going to be a juggernaut and it's not going away anytime soon.
Looking at some of ITV's trickier trials, the Nightly Show. Kevin was asked, "Did it work?"
Yeah.
And he said, "Not really."
Yeah. Yeah. I must say, what's nice about all of these controller sessions is that there has been a real sense of honesty that I don't feel like we've had.
It's quite unusual.
Partly, no, I think it's also they brought the commissioners on, so there's a bit of a conversation going on. But also, they're not being grilled by tough-ass news kind of anchors. Yeah. They're actual journalists. They've been
been
questioned by sort of people who are fans of television, a real person, Boyd. He's a fan of television.
Boyd is a sort of person. But, that's absolutely right.
You're right, I'm definitely not going to go in
but
there.
But you do mean there's a sense of kind of we're all in this together, we want to hear what you do. I mean,
without being a glasses half empty guy, I think that we are in a lull in television though, and I think that that's part of why we're getting the level of dishonesty. People have tried things over the past couple of years, like The Nightly Show, and I think Love Island was a surprise to everybody, including ITV2. But the reality of what's going on in TV right now is that there are lots of things that are coming to an end. Game of Thrones, we've seen the end of Mad Men and Breaking Bad, and I think that we're actually not seeing the replacements, those super hits, those super brands. And I think that once you kind of come back
into... I think Stranger Things and Fargo and the impact
but
of Line of
Beauty. I don't think that they're as big as the big conversation pieces like Love Island, like Strictly, like Bake Off, like, you know.
I think entertainment. I think drama
is a peak. Totally, yeah. And I think, in fact, the interesting thing about the festival is my one criticism would be I don't feel there's enough sessions
there's
about
enough drama.
Drama.
And given that Diedrich is a chair and he's curating it and
so
he's a drama.
So for me, it's weird because drama is the absolute massive expanding area. And I think drama's never been better. I think the quality is incredible. Every week I get to see a new drama on BBC or ITV or Channel 4 and I'm like, well, they're
and
all.
Netflix and
you can't, it's almost like you cannot go below a certain bar now of quality on TV.
And,
drama. And I remember,
and the two drama sessions are against each other in an hour.
So there's a Line of Duty.
Line of Duty and Stars. Right. Carmi and Emma Frost.
I think that should be, next year, it's got to be the big focus. It's Netflix alone, which is helping, I think it's part of the story, but not by any means the whole story, because BBC and ITV are churning out hours and hours and hours of new original drama, and it's bold, exciting stuff. But I think Stranger Things is a huge cultural phenomenon,
and we'll see how it returns.
We'll
but
see how it returns,
but Game of Thrones actually did take a while to become what it was.
Yes, absolutely.
You know,
but I guess, we make more factual stuff. We make fact ed. We make entertainment programming, and I think that there certainly feels like there's a moment where people are scratching their heads, kind of going, "We still haven't found that Saturday night format that's going to be replacing."
Oh yeah,
whatever
that's
is
true.
Going on.
Yeah. I think entertainment's in a lull.
That,
I agree with
new,
that.
That new fact ed format, like The Apprentice, like Bake Off, that's going to be moving on. And I think that actually a lot of people here, I think drama is its own thing, and it's got a much closer relationship with film, and it feels like when I'm here there's a more of a sense around factual and documentaries based on the amount of sessions there are, and that has left people a little bit thinking, you know, what is actually next, and do we need a changing of the guard with Jay going and things turning around slightly and Kevin's strategy coming to fruition, to kind of really see what is going to, all those channels are going to look like moving forward.
I do get the sense they're all obsessed with getting a new entertainment format.
It's time.
Particularly
well
for Saturday
overdue.
Night.
Yeah. It's well overdue.
But I think they're a little bit too obsessed.
I'm doing a session tomorrow that is called Move Over Drama, Entertainment is
I
Back.
Saw, oh my God. I saw that.
Which,
I
mean, I looked
fault.
At the title and was like, really? Yeah.
It's definitely not true.
Slightly embarrassing, really.
I'm coming to that session and I'm going to heckle.
But the trouble is, Kate Phillips said today, didn't she, on the BBC, on Charlotte's session, the BBC One session, that they have they commissioned 50 developments for 50 new entertainment formats.
Yeah.
50.
Yeah. That's
and
all.
They still haven't found
still haven't
a
got
big
exactly.
sticky
yeah.
hit yet. Yeah. You know, it's really difficult because it also challenges the way people watch television, doesn't it? I mean, Strictly is still a moment. You know, everybody stops to watch Strictly or Bake Off. You know, presumably those are the things you want to watch in the moment. But you have to kind of get the moment there first to put the show into to make it work. It's really it's a different era.
Absolutely. We've had a couple of years of The Voice moving from BBC to ITV, Bake Off moving from one place to Channel 4, and they're all just swapping the same formats or recreating the same formats again. But it definitely, we are overdue either a Fact 10 format or either a big entertainment show that does drive conversation, and I don't think that we have it, and it's a bit of a shame that we haven't seen it here.
Any other sessions that you've enjoyed particularly that have been insightful or interesting?
I enjoyed Patrick Holland's first controller session, you know, because that was BBC, they were all in the same room. Now BBC One and Channel 4 and Jay is always a star of the festival anyway, because people always hope she's going to say something wicked. You know, they're in the big, big venue, and Patrick did the quiet one in BBC Two, and it was very rich. It felt there was a lot of interesting content that really challenged how to tell big, deep stories about society as well. There was a beautiful clip, I think, from the documentary, Stan, of a show called Gifted. It seemed to be a beautifully made films about gifted kids who also had free school meals. So it's about what it's like to be academically gifted in a community where, you know, the aspiration for university or the aspiration to kind of continue education isn't hardwired in your family. And the couple of little clips of it made people literally go, kind of, you could hear a pin drop. Because these children talked with, they were like 10 or 11, and they talked with such hope and power of their own thought, you know. It was really moving. So I thought that was a very special little session, actually.
Faraz, anything?
Like I said earlier, there's a lot going on with new young voices that I think is really exciting, and you know that's part of it. I think that people are starting to get a bit more confidence and kind of going, let's look at a new generation of presenters and talent that we can start getting out there. And like I said, I went to the Dan and Phil session. I thought they were really great. I've just seen Vooj walk past. We've seen you know, we've seen some people that aren't instantly recognisable as faces of primetime TV, but certainly are recognisable too. There's literally fans outside with autograph books. I've not seen that at the British TV Festival before, and I think that's really exciting.
And yeah, I was chatting to someone last night about Vooj because I was really excited that he's here, and everyone at the table was like, no idea who he is. Never heard of Copper 90.
Yeah,
and these are people who would say that they were football fans. And you kind of go,
well,
that's weird.
We did a show with him, Four to the Floor, and you know, Vooj was on the sofa, and he was one of our presenters. Yeah. And actually, when he was doing that show, the Grenfell thing happened, and he was a representative voice of that community.
Yeah.
And I definitely think that there's an opportunity to get those voices out there and bring them here so we can actually find out about them. It shouldn't be the same old voices and faces again and again.
Mm. I did this session yesterday with the guys who make the Ellen show, and talking about their kind of digital approach, and they have huge numbers on their YouTube channel and a massive amount of hits, and they get lots of stuff that goes viral, and they're kind of, there's a sort of cycle where their audience are creating content, they're then boosting it on the show, and then it kind of feeds itself. And it's really interesting because it felt like no one in the UK is doing anything like that. And it felt like a good session.
It's a really good point, because you also did Ben Winston last year, didn't you?
Yeah, it was the same
producer of James Corden show.
Yeah. But this with guys who are much more established and been doing
it. But the amazing thing to me is, because again, this goes back to Kevin Ligo, head of ITV yesterday, when he said that he's tried the nightly show, it didn't work, he's probably not going to bring it back, certainly not at 10 o'clock. And I'm like, what? He said that for ITV, everyone goes to 10 o'clock, that's it, it's over, everyone's going to bed.
They got home at 6.
Like, really? They're home at 6, so there's a 4-hour window for him, and everything else, forget about it. I'm like, hold on, try at least, do whatever you call it.
Well, the
nightly show.
The MASH report on...
Right, which is pretty good.
Really fun.
Yeah.
But get Dermot, if I'm Kevin Liger, I'm sorry, I've got to tell him how to do his job, get Dermot to host the nightly chat show,
I am.
But do those YouTube things, do sketches and bits... And that's the new economy, isn't it, of those shows? Where and it's working brilliantly for both Late Late Show and
really well.
And Ellen, which is an afternoon show mainly in America. But here they just have
incredible global reach because of YouTube.
And that's what my point. They're obsessed with this effing Saturday night thing, getting 5 million people at least.
And overnight still.
You know, it's not just trying to do other stuff.
Yeah,
it's important.
Going back to, you know, I don't keep banging on about it because I've literally just walked out of that session, but Dan and Phil were saying this. I think the issue that in the UK is this geo-blocking issue. There is a problem about the fact that we still haven't worked out this thing about, do we make content available worldwide? How instantly do we make it available? Does it happen beforehand? Does it happen afterwards?
You just do, don't you?
The conversation hasn't happened yet. Okay. There's not enough formats that have come trying it out, and it's all been picked off the back of Britain's Got Talent and X Factor, and they're the ones that are successful on YouTube. And ITV will always tell you that the top YouTube channels in the UK are all ITV shows. But
they're not doing anything innovative,
exactly,
though, are they?
They're
just saying, okay, that was a good clip from the show,
put it up online.
That's not...
It's not. And I think that what we need to do is figure out, as you're saying, how can we drive the conversation forward? A little bit like what John Oliver is doing, where you see the rant on Facebook and kind of go, oh yeah, that show's coming out this weekend, I need to make sure I watch that. We need to start seeing that.
You have
here.
To be confident enough in your content that you do make it globally available on YouTube, and at the same time...
I know, and there's this obsession with sort of geo-blocking things, isn't there, and protecting first windows and all of that.
It's such a dated way of looking at things.
And it takes someone like Ben Winston, producer of A Late Show, to go, just don't fucking worry about that, just everyone's got to watch it. And it's a no-brainer.
And actually, the Ellen show is now shown on ITV2 because they could demonstrate there was a UK audience, because they're all watching it on YouTube and loving it. Yeah. And then it gets broadcast, so it makes commercial sense.
I think the one thing that I really would love to start seeing moving forward is much better trailers for dramas, for entertainment shows. Sometimes we get them right. The Bake Off one started going viral and that became a thing. You know, people had an opinion about it. But if you look at Netflix, I would argue that a lot of the conversational cachet that they've got is by making an absolutely killer trailer for Stranger Things. Girl Boss was a great trailer. I'm not sure many people actually ended up watching it.
We'll never know.
An amazing trailer. And
well, you only have to look at.
I liked Glow.
But your trailer was even better.
Yeah,
than
the trailer was amazing.
And I think we need to be much better at like film. making incredible trailers, because those trailers go viral when they're done.
And they, you know, finally are encouraged to. I do remember back in the day, and the BBC battling to be allowed to put our trailers online. Oh no, I don't think so. I mean, now of course they do. And you know, you look at the big film trailers, how many millions of hits they have.
And
before
it's spent
the shows
on them
come.
As well. They're invested in. They're not an afterthought. They're like, we need to carve out a bit of budget to make sure that this trailer is right.
Very often better than the product.
Yes.
It's when they have all the jokes.
That's not all necessarily a bad thing. No, it's like, you know, you're driving attention. Well, you're driving audience, and
it's
that's
a great
how you get your
in film. I mean, most film trailers are better than film.
You say, that was funny. And they go, no, that was all the jokes.
Exactly.
We have just got time for our media quiz, which is this week entitled Monkey Tennis. So there have been a few new commissions announced at the festival. Your job is to ascertain the network on which it will air. It's the best of three. You will buzz in with your name. The winner is Tony Hayes. Here we go. This is commission number one. Gordon on cocaine.
Boyd. ITV.
Fantastic form from you, Boyd. Tell me something about the show.
Yeah, this is part of the... Is it called Crime and Punishment or something?
Season? Have you read these already?
Boyd's seen all the screeners. He's had all the trailers. He works for an entertainment magazine.
I do get sent press.
I might disqualify you.
Sorry.
I'm probably going to disqualify you for this quiz.
And I also went to the Kevin Ligo session. It was mentioned.
Yes, it's
weirdly
part of a season called Crime and Punishment, Boyd. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, sorry. But weirdly, Gordon Ramsay is doing this thing, a documentary about crime. It is bizarre.
Going to South and Central America and just watching people cook up drugs.
Exactly.
Why not?
Why not?
Get punished as well.
There,
we see the crime. Is, are
it's
they
gonna
getting
be real
punished?
Life narcos.
I think, are they going to send Piers Morgan to jail?
I hope so. Kevin Ligo did apologise right at the beginning for Piers Morgan. Yeah. Of his session, so that was good.
Okay, so Boyd, 1-0 to you. This might be a whitewash. Icons. The story of the 20...
Me, Kate. That was BBC Two.
It was BBC Two. Yeah. Absolutely right.
Yeah. I'm going to the bar. Century. This is like... I don't even know why I'm here.
There's still one left. You can tie
it's
it up.
Channels, you see.
This is a new global history series telling the definitive story of the 20th century through the people who made it. And that does sound like a good, honest BBC Two show.
Yeah.
It's not going out on anything else.
Textbook BBC Two.
Boyd, you're not allowed to buzz in on this one. Okay, I'm just to even things up a bit.
Well, you know what? I'm going to say, before you even say it, I'm going to say Channel 4. I'm going to stick my neck out there and go...
Well, first of all, you're going to have to say your name. Buzz in.
Faraz, Channel 4.
Let's see. So, the third one...
I'm getting my wallet out. I'm putting my money on the table. This is how confident I am.
The button.
BBC One. Oh. Kate.
Yes.
You can't get the order right, Kate. You're so excited.
It's a format. You've got the format all wrong.
Completely wrong.
Yes, it is BBC One. This is families competing in challenges at home.
It's Gogglebox, the game show.
And they managed to pitch it without mentioning Gogglebox.
I know.
People have never done something in the living room.
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
And it's Alex Horn's...
Yeah, I do. Lovely Alex Horn. Good idea.
And could be a mainstream hit, I think.
Yeah, they showed clips of it on the BBC and it looked funny. But it is Gogglebox, the game show.
Yeah, but kind of, it's sort of silly. It's got some of that kind of Alex's silliness.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And DNA in it, totally. Which is perfect for that. Yeah.
So and that was seems like his voice of the button. They have to all these families have to press a button.
I think the premise is that the button is in your house and you don't know when you're going to have to play whatever the game is.
Yeah.
But the button goes green and then you've got a race and then hit the button. So there's a kind of
race. Then get the rules right.
Don't forget your toothbrush where you have to flick your light switches on and off.
You don't even have to rent a studio. It's all in people's houses.
Yeah.
And actually, I love the idea. She did say at one point that, you know, they sometimes leave a child on button watch and then all forget about it and the child wanders off and the button's glowing.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. Or
I can see front page of the Daily Mail already. Yeah. Child left alone with button.
Weirdly, I think, Kate, that means you won.
Oh, my God. Definitely.
I mean, obviously, I disqualified. I did ban you, Boyd. I did ban you.
I'm a media whore. Who knew?
Yeah. You went out on a limb at least for us. With that
it's a disaster. I don't even know why I'm here, if I'm honest. It's like...
No, well, luckily, that's the show. Big thanks to Faraz Osman, Kate Harwood and Boyd Hilton.
Cheers.
Catch up with previous episodes and get the latest episodes as soon as they're released by subscribing for free at the website, themediapodcast.com. Today's show is dedicated to Simon Collum. He is a loyal and valued listener who didn't leave any details about himself. Cut, it's none of our business. Totally fine. Just big thanks for supporting us, Simon. You keep yourself to yourself. please do help us stay on the air. Go to themediapodcast.com/donate now and give generously. I'm talking to you three. I'm Rick Edwards. The producer was Matt Hill. The Media Podcast is a PPM production. Till next time, goodbye.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.